This is Bobby Hardy with the commercial news for Vermilion County for Friday, September 11th, 2020. We'll start with a cover story. D118 Board gets update on start of school. Out of Danville, Danville District 118 Superintendent Alicia Gittes apologized for the rough start to the new school year at Wednesday night's school board meeting. "We had a few technical difficulties," she said. "I want to apologize to anyone and everyone who had issues." Gittes was referring to the issues students and their parents had logging into the district's remote learning platform and getting through the district's IT department help desk on the first day of school on Tuesday. "The internet is going to crash. The power is going to go out," Gittes said. "It's going to happen, and we are working to resolve the issues." Assistant Superintendent of Secondary Education Beth Jacoby said 292 calls were made to the help desk Tuesday, with district employees spending 22.2 hours on the phone. On Wednesday, the help desk received an additional 244 phone calls and retrieved 103 voicemails before another 100 voicemails came in. The employees spent 19.9 hours on the phone. One of the biggest issues was resetting the password on the Chromebooks the district issued to the students. District employees fielded 1,393 calls Tuesday and another 932 calls Wednesday, helping parents and students to reset passwords. Jacoby added that a total of 2,354 Chromebooks have been distributed since August 25th to most of the remote learning students who needed one. The district is still waiting on a Chromebook order to come in for kindergarten through second grade students who are remote learning. Jacoby said those Chromebooks are expected to be delivered at the end of the month. As the start of the new school year approached, Gittes said more parents opted to switch their child to remote learning. Currently, 3,911 students district-wide participate in remote learning, whereas 724 K-4 students are attending school in person. Board member Darlene Halloran said she wanted to know how many of the 3,911 remote learning students had logged in and attended their classes this week. Danville High School Principal Tracy Cherry reported that student attendance on the remote learning platform has been far better than in the spring. "Teachers are very excited because they were missing only a few kids," she said. "One had 23 out of 25 students logged in, another had 26 of 28 students in attendance. The numbers have been really good compared to the spring," Cherry said. Halloran asked what would happen if students stopped logging in and attending remotely. "Teaching assistants and other members of the support staff will be out ringing doorbells," Gita said. As of the 724 students who are attending school in person, the district is taking every precaution to maintain a healthy environment. Seth Oldfield, who is with the Buildings and Grounds Department, said that the district recently received 350 cases of disinfectant wipes that were distributed district-wide 2 weeks ago when teachers began arriving to set up their classrooms. Assistant Superintendent of Elementary Education John Hart said students are having their temperature checked as they board the school bus, and a sticker is displayed on their clothing so they do not have to be rechecked when they enter the school building. Board member Sharon Schroeder asked what would happen if Illinois reverted to stricter COVID-19 guidelines that would prevent in-person learning, as well as what would happen if the pandemic ended. "We only have 724 kids learning in person, so we would move those kids to remote learning if Illinois went back to phase 3," Gita said. "If the pandemic ends, we would come back in person at a break or the beginning of the new quarter." We'll move now to another cover story from March to Movement. Black Lives Matter rallied to encourage people to vote. Out of Danville, another Black Lives Matter event is planned for Saturday in Danville, this time a rally to encourage people to vote in the November election. BLM in Danville, from the March to the Movement, will take place at 2 p.m. Saturday. Another march had been planned to end at 201 North Vermilion Street, the Vermilion County Administration Building, where the Danville Election Commission and Vermilion County Clerk offices are. However, the march has changed to a rally due to security concerns. The rally will take place at the County Administration Building at 201 North Vermilion Street. The event is hosted by local residents Mary Catherine Roberson and Jeremy Bell. Roberson said May's march was in response to George Floyd's death and in general national issues. The march to the public safety building attracted hundreds of people. She said that there was some concern that people are showing up for demonstrations, but then there's no follow-through. Saturday's rally is against systemic racism and police brutality, and Roberson said they are asking people to go beyond the demonstration, carrying it into the action of voting. Roberson said about people who run these systems of power where systemic racism is allowed to exist, many of those persons can be checked by a vote. Numbers in voting can incite change. In addition to the march and this rally, organizers also were involved with the Juneteenth event at Lincoln Park. Roberson said these events are to get an important message out to the community. "We know the energy is there," she said, about wanting to make the events impactful. There will be speakers at the rally at the Vermilion County Administration Building, including an active high school student and with NAACP President Ed Butler and others pushing voter registration and the importance of voting. According to Lindsay Light, Chief Deputy County Clerk, Supervisor of Elections with Vermilion County, earlier this week, they had received approximately 2,300 vote-by-mail applications. This is already more than double the amount the office has seen in the past, when they would see about 900 to 1,000 vote-by-mail applications during the entire 6 weeks of early voting. The office continues to encourage voters to vote early, in person, or by mail. Early voting will start September 24th. The last cover story is also out of District 118. District 118 sees increase in student count out of Danville. Danville District 118 Superintendent Alicia Gittes reported at Wednesday night's school board meeting that the number of registered students in the district has increased in the last 2 weeks. A total of 4,635 students had registered as of Wednesday, compared to the 3,832 students who had registered by August 21st. The district's enrollment is still more than 1,100 students short of last year's enrollment of 5,804. Gittes said once the technical issues are resolved with the Chromebooks and the remote learning program, she and other staff members are committed to supporting the district students and parents by every means possible. "We are going to provide tutoring. We are doing multiple food distribution sites. We are implementing flexible support hours for parents and students. We will be providing virtual library services, and we are trying to make our help desk more robust. We're committed to making this year one in which we will see substantial growth during a challenging time," Gittes said. Meal distributions began September 8th for remote learning students and will continue to take place every Tuesday. Meals are to be picked up by using the student's barcode meal ID at one of the following schools and times: Danville High School from 10 to 11 a.m. or 5 to 6 p.m., Mark Demon Elementary School from 5 to 6 p.m., Southview Upper Elementary School from 5 to 6 p.m., or Northridge Middle School from 5 to 6 p.m. Also on Wednesday, the board approved the reappointment of Buildings and Grounds Director Skip Truex to the Danville Public Building Commission for the 5-year period ending September 2025, entered into a contract for $78,000 with K-12 Elevate, so the service may provide a certified bilingual ESL staff member to work with Northridge Middle School and Danville High School students remotely. The district has been able to fill two bilingual teaching positions and an English as a secondary language ESL teacher position that would provide sufficient bilingual and ESL services as required by the Title III grant. Brandy Kuchewski, a grants coordinator who oversees the district's English language program, told the board that the district has 4 certified teachers and 3 teaching assistants to cover bilingual and ESL services in all the elementary schools and Southview Upper Elementary School. "It's filling 6 periods of instruction," Curriculum Director Mary Ellen Bunton said of the current staffing. An ESL opening now exists at Northridge Middle School, and a position at DHS has remained unfilled for 3 years. A bilingual certified substitute who previously met the needs of the students for the last 2 years moved away from the area, Kuchewski said. In addition, a full-time bilingual teacher at Northeast Elementary Magnet School left at the end of the 2019-2020 school year, as did a shared bilingual teacher at Mark Denham and Southwest Elementary Schools. The vacancies created a compliance issue for the district with the Title III grant. The district's Title III state consultant verified that using K-12 Elevate would allow the district to remain compliant and appropriately serve Northridge and DHS students during remote learning. Board President Bill Dobbles and Board Member Lou Henderson said they supported offering a monetary incentive to attract bilingual teachers to the district. "We need incentives to hire bilingual teachers or to have our teachers go back to school to become a bilingual teacher," Dobbles said. The board also heard GEDIS's debunk a local TV station's report that some of the district's support staff received notice that they will be laid off. "The goal of the Board of Education is to use our support staff in new and creative ways to move our students forward and to the next level," she said. "So no, we have not done a reduction in force." GEDIS also told the board members that when general obligations bonds, which were not to exceed $10.5 million, were sold last week to reinforce the district's outstanding bonds from 2011, the cost savings was greater than anticipated. "Because of the current low interest rates, the district anticipated a cost savings of $2.4 million over the remaining 10 years of the 2011 bond it sold to fund the renovations of Northridge Middle, Southview Upper Elementary, and Mark Denham Elementary Schools. The cost savings ended up being $2.9 million, according to GEDIS. The refinancing will help to lower the interest amount the district pays on the bonds, therefore lowering the tax rate levied on property owners in the district. We'll move now to the obituaries. Out of Danville, Pierce, Diana Ruth Pierce, 77, of Danville, died at 6:49 a.m. September 8th at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Celebration of life service will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 15th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park, and visitation is from 9 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 15th at the funeral home. Out of Cayuga, Indiana, Carpenter, Sarah L. Carpenter, 34, of rural Cayuga, died Tuesday evening, September 8th, at Cancer Treatment Centers of America in Zion, Illinois. Celebration of Life gathering and lunch will be at 11 a.m. EDT, Saturday, September 19th, at the Cayuga Community Center. Per her family's request, casual attire would be appreciated. Diverter Funeral Home in Cayuga is assisting the family with arrangements. Also out of Danville, Zond, Sharon K. Willison Fox Zond, passed away on September 3rd, 2020. Her graveside memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. CDT, Saturday, September 12th, 2020, at Pleasant Hill Cemetery, rural Kansas, Illinois. Arrangements are being handled by Cudlig King Funeral Home out of Charleston, Illinois. We'll move now to the community briefs. Out of Danville, road work set. The City of Danville announces that sewer and sidewalk repairs at Bowman and Cleveland Avenues will begin Monday, weather permitting, and are scheduled to be completed by September 18th. During this time, northbound Bowman will be reduced to one lane at Cleveland. This work will begin at 6:30 a.m. Monday and will affect motorists traveling north through the above-specified lane closure. Choose an alternative route to avoid delays. There will be a high volume of construction traffic during operations. Motorists and pedestrians are urged to use caution while traveling in the work zone and to be attentive to the changes in traffic control. For more information, call 431-2395. Book Club for Teens. The Danville Public Library is starting a new and improved book club for area teens. This new model will blend elements of a monthly subscription box with elements of a traditional book club. The library has a limited number of boxes, so let the library know why you should be chosen to participate. To apply and for further details, visit tinyurl.com/dpl-teen-bookbox. Lunch Bunch to Meet. The Class of 1959 Lunch Bunch will meet from 11 to 1 p.m. Thursday, September 17th at Jocko's. Bring cleaning supplies and personal care items to donate. In other local news, children's advocates to be honored out of Urbana. Do you know an individual or group who deserves recognition for their work with children? If so, now is the time to nominate them for the OSF Healthcare Children's Hospital of Illinois 30th Annual Community Advocacy Award. OSF Children's Hospital annually recognizes those throughout Illinois who are making a difference in the lives of children. Community Advocacy Awards are presented in the following categories. Bill Houlihan Professional Award. This award recognizes a professional who advocates for children through their work, going over and beyond the daily expectations to improve the lives of children. Christine Zach Edmonds Volunteer Award. This award recognizes adults who embrace children and their issues, offer their time and talents as a volunteer to improve the lives of children. Zoe Stowell Youth Award. This award recognizes a person or group 18 years or younger whose unique accomplishments have improved the quality of life for children and or teens in Central Illinois. Children's Advocacy Board Group Award. This award recognizes a company or organization that works continually over time in a variety of ways to improve the lives of children. Dr. Mary Schultz Physician Award. Schultz was a champion for children throughout her lifetime. She was well respected by all who knew her. The Dr. Mary Schultz Award was created to carry on Schultz's legacy as well as honor other physicians who spend their life bettering the lives of children. Visit the OSF Children's Hospital website for more information or to make your nomination before October 31st. You also may call 309-624-5906 for more information. Our last local story, I-74 work to begin September 21st out of Danville. The Illinois Department of Transportation announces that construction on Interstate 74 near Danville, just east of Exit 210, US 150 Martin Luther King Drive, begins September 21st. The project involves replacing the bridges that carry I-74 over the Salt Fork Vermilion River. Two median crossovers will need to be constructed, which will require lane closures. One lane in both directions will be open at all times during the work, this year's portions of which is to be expected to be completed by the end of November. This Rebuild Illinois project is another example of the significant investment being made for the future, said Acting Illinois Transportation Secretary Omar Osman in a press release. Thanks to Governor Pritzker's support and leadership, Rebuild Illinois is creating economic opportunities across the state by investing in infrastructure while improving safety and quality of life. Motorists can expect delays and should allow extra time for trips through this area. To avoid the work area when feasible, use of alternative routes should be considered. Drivers are urged to pay close attention to changed conditions and signs in the work zones. Obey the posted speed limits and refrain from using mobile devices. Be alert for workers and equipment. Over the next 6 years, IDOT is planning to improve more than 3,300 miles of highway and 8.4 million square feet of bridge deck as part of the Rebuild Illinois Capital Program, which is investing $33.2 billion into all modes of transportation. Year one included about $2.7 billion of improvements statewide on 1,706 miles of highway, 128 bridges, and 228 additional safety improvements. For IDOT District 5 updates, follow IDOT on Twitter at @IDOTDistrict5 or view area construction details on IDOT's Traveler Information Map on gettingaroundillinois.com. We'll move now to a local sports story. First win, Lady Vikings sweep Falcons out of Danville. Kathy Hoopt has spent a lot of time teaching the game of tennis. This fall, she has added the title of Danville girls tennis coach to her resume. On Thursday, the Lady Vikings gave their coach her first victory with a 9-0 triumph over the Gibson City Melvin Sibley Falcons at the Danville Tennis Center. It was a great day for the girls, said Hoopt, whose team suffered a pair of hard-fought 5-4 losses to Normal Community and Almond Richland County to open the year. This felt good after those first two matches, said Danville's Lexi Ellis, who won her match at number one singles 6-love, 6-love over Katie Stellinger It was frustrating to lose those first two matches, but I thought we did really well. Things went considerably better on Thursday for Danville, who won 96 of the 102 games against Gibson City, Melvin Sibley. The plan for today was to go out and execute the things we had been working on as a team, Hope said. They really did a nice job of that all the way through the lineup. The biggest thing for us right now is being consistent. We are working on keeping the ball deep and making points go long. Hope admitted there is a difference between being a tennis instructor and a high school coach, but she couldn't have asked for a better group of players for her first season. This is really a great group to work with, she said. It's a young group as we don't have a senior in our top six and they work extremely hard. With everything going on, these girls are happy to be out there every day since they are not in school and they're having a great time. Ellis pointed out that Hope's ability as a tennis instructor has already been valuable to the Lady Vikings. She works with each of us individually, and she has helped us improve a lot of things already, Ellis said. We are a strong team in all six spots. We know each other really well, and our team concept is really strong. But how did Ellis think she played on Thursday? I wasn't happy with my first two matches. I didn't feel like I've been playing my best tennis, she said. I was just trying to get the ball back at the net, and I was playing really cautious. Today, I definitely went for more shots, and I felt better with how I played. And what is the goal for this season? The ultimate goal for the Danville team is to win the Big 12 Conference, Hope said. But if we play hard and make progress all year, that would be great. This weekend, the Danville girls tennis team will travel to Bloomington for the Raider Invitational. The next home match for the Ladies Vikings will be September 22nd against the Champaign Centennial Chargers. We'll move now to an editorial. 9/11 unity still needed today. Apply lessons of the past to today's new challenges. As the years passed and mounted, Americans who experienced the terrorist attack on their country, either up close or from far away, often observed that it always seemed like it just happened yesterday. Such was the impact, emotional and physical, of September 11, 2001. Today is the 19th anniversary of that terrible series of events that took almost 3,000 lives. What once was unthinkable to ordinary Americans, that terrorists could hijack passenger airliners from U.S. airports and fly them into buildings, suddenly became shockingly real. Both towers of New York City's iconic World Trade Center were hit, as was the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., which houses the U.S. Department of Defense. Both WTC towers burned, then collapsed. A huge gash was opened in the Pentagon. A fourth hijacked plane, believed to be headed for either the White House or U.S. Capitol, failed to reach its target because passengers rallied against their attackers, forcing the terrorists piloting the plane to crash into a Pennsylvania farm field far short of their destination. The day left an imprint on everyone, and despite the passage of time, it always seemed like yesterday. If any traumatic event, situation, or circumstance was ever going to push those awful 9/11 memories further back in our minds, it is this year. The year 2020 is certainly searing a place in human consciousness, and we're not even three-fourths through it. The collective trauma of 9/11 generated a range of emotions from disbelief, anger, and rage to grief and intense sadness. Yet it unified this country in ways unseen since World War II. Americans stood together to face down a common enemy. That sense of togetherness was psychologically soothing during difficult times. As America confronts an invisible yet destructive enemy in the coronavirus that has swept over the world, the type of unity it takes to counter a national public health threat does not match the resolve Americans demonstrated after 9/11. Despite rhetoric that, quote, we're all in this together, end quote, the collective spirit it takes to prevail over a pandemic has been lacking. In the absence of national leadership and a cohesive public health strategy, measures to slow the spread of COVID-19 have been largely limited to the states. Some are doing well, others are not, and an effective response to the crisis is hindered by divisive partisan allegiances that have only been made worse by inept political leadership at the national level. While many other countries took successful steps to control the virus spread, it continues to run rampant through the U.S. To date, More than 190,000 people have died in this country alone. The U.S. economy, after 11 strong years of growth and expansion, collapsed and continues to struggle. These are troubled times. But as we pause to remember those who died or saw their lives forever change 19 years ago on 9/11, it would be wise to reflect on the lessons learned. That crisis was met with collective resolve and an American spirit that did not wane. President George W. Bush was at his best when he unified the country and set a course to battle the enemy. Let us never forget the courage of those who answered the call to arms and rallied to the cause, and let us hope that we can still muster the courage to duplicate that effort as we battle today's unrelenting challenges. An interesting story out of the Associated Press. Letters reveal public distaste for booze out of Boston. It was a tempest in a teapot, or more accurately, a whiskey tumbler. Presidential transitions are always at least a little tricky. Case in point, researchers at the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library and Museum have found a cache of letters from Americans objecting to JFK's embrace of cocktails at White House events. The letter shed new insight into President Dwight D. Eisenhower's handoff to Kennedy early in 1961 and the striking different attitudes that people held about alcohol at official functions. Quote, "Liquor dulls the brain and loosens the tongue," end quote, one disappointed citizen, Kenneth P. Kennedy of Sparta, Illinois, no relation to JFK, wrote to the nation's newly minted 35th president. Quote, "Can we risk our national and international security on such potential incompetence?" End quote. Eisenhower was no teetotaler, but historians say he presided over a largely cocktail-free White House. Enter Kennedy, who had already raised some eyebrows as the first Roman Catholic to be elected president. JFK Library archivists say the letters of protest began arriving after newspapers reported on Kennedy's first official event, a January 1961 reception honoring the new president's appointees. For the first time, there was a bar in the state dining room with waiters to stir up martinis or pour vodka, scotch, bourbon, or champagne, the Washington Post reported. What followed was a sort of low-key liquor gate. Letters, some typed, others handwritten, expressed shock and worry that the U.S. would lose its dignity and standing in the world. Quote, "Dear Mr. President, I think many feel humiliation and disgrace over our nation today when we learn of our White House turned into shameful, drunken, all-night carousal and dancing," reads one from Edith Fritz of Idaho. "Dignity previously engendered, gone. May God have pity upon your poor soul," end quote. "Our nation was founded on men of Christian ideals. Let's keep it that way," another reads from Ruby Turner of Dunkertown, Iowa. At the time, scholars say the Kennedy administration played down the public's reaction to the change, noting it received far more letters about civil rights unrest and the Cuban Missile Crisis. With that, we'll wrap up the commercial news for Vermilion County for Friday, September 11th, 2020. This has been Bobby Hardy. Stay safe and stay well.